Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey!
All right, Pop Life Podcast. It's Ivy in the back. Today is March 25th.
Yep, and I'm fully vaccinated.
Well, you got to say you ain't tired or nothing
yet?
Now, my arm, so I didn't feel the shot at all, but I doubled up on the numbing cream again. But everybody has said they didn't. Well, you said you felt the second shot, Inca, but people have told me they didn't really feel the Pfizer shots. So I didn't feel it at all. Like, I felt her touch. I didn't feel the shot at all, but I felt that burn of the shot. You know, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like
you feel the medicine going in.
Exactly. I felt that. Like, by the time I stood up from the chair, I felt that. But I don't care about that. Like, my arm could fall off. I don't care. It's the needle part that I got to get past. So I've been moving my arm, just randomly shaking it. I had taken 2 ibuprofen like an hour before. I doubled up on the numbing cream again, even though that's more of a mental thing for me. And I just took 2 more ibuprofen. So, like, there's whispers of achiness, and my arm feels heavy, but I don't feel sick or sleepy yet.
And
I'm
sleepy? Yeah, because people say that a lot of people,
I said the second one.
Maybe that's what, yeah, the second shot, like, wipes you out for a smooth 24 hours, basically. Yeah. Sleep off and on.
I had like a little low grade fever, maybe like a 99.
Yeah, I heard that too. Like, kind of feel like catching a cold, but it doesn't ever kick in.
I mean, Inca, which one did you say?
See, y'all be talking that shit about me.
Oh, she did that. I have a mother with an N name. I know how that shit goes. Which one did you take?
I took the Pfizer.
Okay, you took the Pfizer. I'm not sleepy yet. I mean,
I got my first shot on Tuesday.
Yay!
Congratulations.
Tuesday, yeah. I went over there today, but they said they wasn't taking no walk-ups. But so I called the number, but it was quick. Like, I called the number and, like, you know, wasn't like no long-ass wait or whatever.
I thought it would be quick.
Yeah, you better show them that AARP card and get in front of that line. Quick bullshit.
Me and Earl over here to get our shot.
Show them a picture of your foot with the gout.
Yeah. So, yes, it's popping off of me on Tuesday. So,
but
the first shot is not bad, right?
It's the second
shot.
You went over to the armory, right?
I'll show you how old school I was. I took the bus to the armory. I took the bus. That damn it. I like the bus better than the train because, you know, you don't get stuck.
I've always enjoyed the bus in New York.
And it ain't really until you get to like Midtown or whatever. It ain't really that much slower than the train. It's much quicker. It's just, you know, it is faster, but it's not like
it's faster depending on
like an hour later.
Like, I used to work when I was in my early 20s, I worked at the Crate and Barrel when it was on 59th and Madison. So the bus was an easier way to get there rather than going to
get to the 6 train.
Going to Columbus Circle and like coming.
Oh, that walk all the way across to the park. That's far.
So I used to leave early enough to take the bus, and it's a really enjoyable ride, especially like going down Fifth Avenue and everything. Yeah.
Going up Madison, that's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it pops up.
I'm happy, Jeff. I'm happy. First of all, I was surprised at how there was a sense of release once I had the second shot, right?
Like you're good to go now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be out here reckless, obviously, you know, because people are stupid. I'm still going to wear masks and also would not feel comfortable not wearing a mask. But I, as I've said here on the show, like, I've been really, like, I don't be outside if I don't absolutely have to be outside. And just the fact that I feel like I can relax those parameters a little bit, like, I was getting food yesterday and there were so many people in the joint. You know, everybody had on masks. I felt very, like, claustrophobic, agoraphobic. I felt all of those phobics. I was it's too many people in here. Like, I was like, y'all gotta come find me outside because I cannot sit in here with all these people. And it wasn't even like we were up on each other. It's just that there were too many people.
Mad people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just knowing that you're inside.
Yeah, just knowing I'm inside, we all breathing each other's air and shit. Like, go away. Like, why? And people kept coming in the door. They're like, why are you coming in the door? Stop.
We want to go to the supermarket too.
I don't think the vaccine is going to change the way I move either. I just feel a little more comfortable about getting on this plane and going to this tropical location.
That
happened.
Yeah.
But
did they give y'all a vaccination card?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a vaccination card. They suggest that you keep it on you.
I read that they're going to be doing the vaccinated passports soon. Like,
you know, it's going to be on your,
it'll be on your passport so you can move around.
I laminated my little card.
I should laminate mine.
You're such a homemaker, man. You should have laminated the card.
I'm going to take a picture of it and put it in my phone, but I should
have. Got it up on the refrigerator and one of them magnets.
Wow, chill out.
Mom found my old vaccination card. She was like, you want me to send you your old one so you have your complete vaccination records? I was like, no, ma'am. I don't need all that. I'm good. But yeah.
So everybody go and get this
vaccine.
Because, you know, pretty soon, like I said, we said last week that Biden said as of May 1st that every adult to just go. Like, there's no excuse for you not to go anymore after May 1. It is not based on pre-existing conditions, whatever. It's just like you're just ready to make an appointment and go. So I don't know what the grace period for that will be, but soon after that, it's going, if you don't have it by then they're just gonna look at you as like, oh, you're just trying to go against the grain. So
yeah, they're already doing it, like Trav's job and everything. Like,
I'm
you
sure
can't move unless you get the
there
vaccine.
You go. And that's gonna spread to the public. Like, you ain't gonna be able to travel. You ain't gonna be able to go to certain restaurants.
Very soon we're gonna be in a place where you definitely have to, especially when we're talking about going back to lab events and sporting events where you're going to show your vaccination card. And I already know that people are going to make it seem like it's a conspiracy theory. But again, let me remind everybody that if you went to certain colleges or universities, you have already done this on some level. They have your vaccination records. I had to get more shots before I went to college. You know what I'm saying? Than I already had. So this is not a new thing. It's just something that's so ingrained. And when you went to school the first time,
The virus is a new thing, but the vaccination,
but the actual how we handle vaccination and proof of vaccinations, none of that is new.
Yeah, when I was, you know,
niggas gonna be like, now we gotta show our
Niggas do what they do. Anyway,
it's gonna be a bunch of freedom papers memes.
Word.
Exactly.
Willie Lynch.
I know it is with the students. Yeah.
So I want to say real quick piece to the NBA. Today was the trade deadline. There's too many trades to even talk about. It's like they went crazy. It's so many trades, so many moving pieces, so many people on new teams. So it's gonna make the rest of the season really interesting to see how some of these teams end up gelling together. LeBron is out 4-6 with a high ankle sprain. That's tough for the Lakers, man. I don't know. That's tough for the Lakers.
Tough for the NBA.
Yeah, tough for the NBA. Yeah, like
it's tough
like
for my, the NBA. It's like, we're not gonna act like they not riding that Bron train to them contracts.
Absolutely, right. The biggest star in the league is out on the biggest franchise in the league is out 4 to 6 weeks going into, which bumps right up into the playoffs. Like, that's tough. So yeah, but you know, anyway, peace to Bron and AD, and I hope they figure this thing out here.
Quick RIP.
Oh yeah, yeah. Go and get shout outs.
RIP to his real name was Craig Grant. Oz from Deaf Poetry. He's only 53.
Wow.
Did they say, was it the COVID that got him? Or they ain't say?
He said natural causes.
They said
natural.
Let me say this. That can also be seen as natural causes. Natural causes really just means was not a violent death. He was not, he didn't die at the hands of anyone.
Yeah.
Natural causes.
Not like at a specific illness that came upon him suddenly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know him. I can't say I knew him, but I definitely used to see him around often.
I feel like he used to be out.
Yeah, in the 90s and stuff like that. He was really around a lot because he was a rapper as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, he was kind of, he's from the Bronx. He's kind of making his bones doing that. And then he got Oz, and that obviously elevated his profile. And then he was very involved with the New York Rican Cafe and So he was definitely like out and around, and like, I mean, you know, I didn't know him, but the couple times I was around him, he's definitely a good dude, cool dude, you know, real New Yorker kind of guy. And you know, 53 years old is pretty young to leave the earth. So peace to him and his family and his loved ones. And you know, sorry for your loss. I want to jump right into. I have a very quick shout out,
and it's gonna feel random, but just hear me out. I want to randomly shout out Blackstreet. I mean, not Blackstreet, Black Sheep. Damn, Black Sheep.
Dres and Mr. Long.
Yes, and I was listening.
This is wild, random.
It's very random. It's because I was listening to my Native Tongues playlist, and shout out to Violator Family, of which Sean is an extended member. I was listening to my Native Tongues playlist, and Black Sheep's music is still just really fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Like, it's really fun to, and Drez's flow, I think, is maybe underrated.
What was the, not the the big
one? It was the Strobe Light Honey one that keeps,
no, what was the one, the first record,
It was it Flavor of the Month? No. What was first for them?
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, Flavor of the Month was first.
Yeah, that was
the video in which Mona is dancing.
Yeah, yeah, Mona's dancing, and they like right. in the field and shit like that. Right. Yeah. I really like that. I really like that record. Yeah, so Piece of Dress.
Dress is gonna be outside heavy too. Dress is out.
Yeah. Dress is definitely be out. Mr. Long, he dipped off the scene ages ago, and he just bounced to never to return. I don't know where he is.
Because when you see Blackstreet on the bill now, that means Dres.
It means Dres. Yeah, you've never seen Long. You know, Long, I don't know where Long.
A lot of them dudes that did that shit, man, they went out and they like basically bought one of them houses way out in like Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Or way deep in Jersey.
Yep.
They own that shit outright.
Yep.
And they work when they want to.
Yeah, got a little studio in the basement.
Always got a studio in the basement.
Working with some young boys and they son make tracks.
Yeah,
get that. So brought up so the piece to Benny Boom, the he's a very famous video director. I was in Atlanta this week past, and I was eating some grub at this place called True Food Kitchen. It's a very popular place. It's on the next mall, and ran into Benny Boom and his whole family. He's down there shooting Black Lightning, and his son makes tracks. You know what I'm saying? But his son
son old Diesel like Benny?
No, his son's he's pretty young. His son's like 13. He's really young. It's like 13, 14, but like he's showing me videos and playing tracks with Busta and for 5 year old, what's it got? The new kids, 5 year old, the new drill kid, whatever.
Yeah, asking us like we fucking know.
Yeah, exactly. Y'all would know. Anyway, yeah. No, and the tracks is pretty good. Like, I mean, you know, he's coming along. So that just kind of sparked my interest. Now I always like Benny, so it's really good to see him too.
It always takes me a minute. I feel like Benny was Benny always that, like.
No, he definitely got big. I mean, he was never small, but he definitely got.
And I see him, I just be like, why?
Because he's still massive now. Like, he's definitely still in the gym on a regular night. He's still like a rock, you know?
Be lifting on a regular
night. Yeah, he'd be lifting stones and shit, you know? But Benny's always been a good dude. And another thing I just noticed being in Atlanta, just kind of looking around, you know those bonnets that the girls wear, the black ones that kind of hang down?
Yeah, therefore, if you have longer hair or longer weave,
that's like a style in Atlanta. Like, they wear them shits outside, like wearing a baseball cap for a dude. I'm like, yo, like everybody's wearing those long in the back bonnets, like just out in the street. Like, I'm going to the store.
I cannot.
It was crazy.
You can't do bonnets in the street. My grandma, that's the one thing. My grandmother was like, you don't do bonnets and rollers in the street. I can do it. I'll put them on in the car. I can't in the street.
Yeah, nothing was worse than getting picked up by my mom from like cheerleading practice or whatever, and she had big ass rollers in her hair with the net tied around that motherfucker.
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God.
She had to keep that hair. I'm just trying to keep it.
Like, I'm gonna get this set and it's gonna be tight for church.
Exactly. And you're gonna deal, young lady. Get on that.
I ain't never say shit.
The best thing is when you don't roll the whole hair. You got like the one or two that won't keep. So you got like one roll over here. You got like one roll over there. You don't take them out to the last minute. Or you got them.
And none of it is okay when you picking up your 15 year old from high school. Right. None of it.
I guess we should jump right into There's a couple good things to talk about this week.
We should just get into Derrick Jackson. And
you want to start that early?
Why the fuck not? Because
yes.
So okay, so I'm gonna say this real quick, and then I'm gonna let y'all run. Derrick Jackson's wife, and I'm not victim blaming.
She's not shaming. Well.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. She's not well. She posted a couple of videos after their initial video of her by herself. One in particular, which she has the camouflage on. Did you see, y'all saw that one with the bonnet?
Spiritual warfare.
Yeah,
it wasn't a bonnet. That was a helmet, brother.
That was a helmet
against the
helmet
sins.
Of protection.
The sins
of helmet of righteousness or some shit.
Righteousness.
Like.
Yeah.
Now I don't know. For
she was trying to walk through the armor of God, but
exactly to the fire and the pits of hell. Now I don't know if her not being well is based on stuff.
I got a theory.
You think she was always that?
No, I've been through her entire IG to the very first post.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. You did the deep dive.
No. I'm not the only person. People were sending
me. No, I know. Like, a lot of people are doing the deep dive. So, they met at Tuskegee, right?
I had to find out the dynamics. I had to know.
I don't know if they're from Tuskegee.
They met at the college.
I think they might have even met in high school, but they both went to Tuskegee. He played for Tuskegee. So Derrick Jackson has a
He was on the team.
He had one catch.
Maybe he was redshirt.
He had one catch.
No, he was on the team.
Come on, accuracy.
We losing play very loosely here.
Okay,
air quotes. All right. Air quotes on the play. He had one catch, literally. He had one catch, literally, in his career. One catch. Yeah.
It counts. He suited up.
I don't know. I don't think he graduated from there.
I don't
not
know.
Not that it matters or whatever, but I don't think they did the four. I don't think he did the four. But anyway.
He did, but I don't know if he did.
Yeah, I think she did, but I don't think he did.
So, Derrick Jackson, I'd never heard of these people before this.
Oh, you had never heard of them? I had seen them.
Well, you be a nigga social media, so I understand. Yeah. You're on the nigga net.
And he had beef early on beef with my boy Ike. No, he had beef with Ike. Ike was funking maybe like 3-4 months ago. Probably more than that. A while ago. So I've been kind of on it since
Ike. Yeah, this is so entertaining.
He's apparently this like relationship YouTuber.
Yes.
I refuse to call him a guru. He's a relationship.
Well, more Instagram than YouTube.
But he does videos. Okay, And apparently, I guess it's been since like 16. I think his book came out in 17, 18. I think his book came out in 18.
Okay.
So when I first saw, the first thing I saw of them was the video where he was confronting the cheating allegations. The blogger who broke it is the same blogger who always breaks John Gray shit.
Tasha K.
Yeah, people like to come to her for like this really messy shit.
Messy.
Like ancillary black figures. And so I thought at first like he was a pastor or some shit because they was talking so much about God. Come to find out, this nigga just got saved last February.
Yeah.
You've been like your Christian walk during the pandemic, if it's new, don't count because you ain't even had to go to church every Sunday.
It's because there's no temptation. You're not even in the club.
Exactly. You know what?
But you're not even going. You're not even in fellowship. So I'm not whatever. And at the time that. Apparently, he had been cheating. Danaya, I guess that's how you pronounce her name, his wife.
Yeah, that one.
Left them early last year.
Mm-hmm.
He says that's when he got saved. And that the woman who says that he was cheating with her was somebody that he was seeing while they were apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that he has, you know, done all kinds of things with all kinds of women and... he's told her everything that was inappropriate for the entire time that they've known each other.
Let's stop real quick. A couple of things. First of all, I think you know, but if you don't know, this is the first time the wife's ever been shown. So previous to this, he would always do his videos sitting in the car by himself.
Yes, he would always be in the car. He was in the car this week too. Shit, ain't even
exactly. So people did not know he was married or had a girl.
Oh, I thought he at least knew he was married.
No. He never mentioned his wife until this past week.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, yes.
So I didn't know.
Yeah,
that is
over her page.
No.
Not as much anymore. Yeah, it was.
Other thing is, just as a nigga, no nigga ever says everything. So that shit he told his wife everything, that nigga's lying. Now I'm gonna say
nobody should actually have to tell anybody. Nobody.
I'm saying that he did, and I'm saying that nigga is lying. He did not tell his wife about every woman and every girl he fucked.
I think he actually may have, Sean, but let me tell you why I think he may have.
That nigga's lying.
I don't think he cares, and that's the part I'm about to get to. Here's the thing about Danae. People were posting stuff that she had been writing, I think people were assuming it was a response to him cheating about her obsession with other women and going through phones and trying to replicate other women and how they walk or what they wear and how they are. And, you know, it was a spirit of jealousy and it was the spirit of competition and it was the spirit of obsession. And it was all these spirits, all these demons, all these whatevers. So I started looking more and more at her social media going back from before this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things to note. The first thing is that, so they got engaged in 17, married in 18. They had their first child at 16, got engaged in 17, married at 18. When they got married, she was pregnant with the second. They have two kids.
Okay.
She graduated Tuskegee at 11. So in 11. So that's the 12-year whatever. So from Tuskegee going forward. Mm-hmm. So people are saying they've been together 12 years. They absolutely have not been together 12 years. He doesn't show up. Her Instagram history goes back to 14, 15. He doesn't show up on her page until the third trimester of her pregnancy. So what I think happened was that they were still in each other's orbit, you know, maybe dip in, dip out. And that when she got pregnant, he was probably on some, like, I don't know, I'm not really trying to
settle down yet.
Like, I mean, come on. And that's why he don't show up till the third trimester. Like, the second picture of him on her Instagram anywhere is her baby shower. Then she then he's all over the place, right, for a while. Then she disappears off social media again in the 19, which I guess might have been like around the time she found whatever happened that she left. And by the time she comes back, everything is all God, scripture. It was not previous. So I guess he got saved, they got saved, whatever the fuck, right? But then she starts talking about all her healing and her demons and her shit. And one of the things that she says is that she wanted to be a boy. She was obsessed with the idea of being a boy. She dressed in baggy clothes. She dressed in boys' clothes.
So you think she's lesbian?
I think she's confused because
also not the same thing.
And I think I think her obsession with women might be about either her discomfort in her own identity as a woman and or her having feelings for women, being attracted to women in a way she can't explain. And I think that somebody has told her, because she says it was about her dad, and it was about her dad died when she was 12, and she was doing this shit as she was still dressing like a guy as a teenager. So she's the
bisexual.
I think the church has taken some very confused feelings that she has and has said to her, you're focused on women because of demons and that's the spirit or whatever, and you just wanted your father's
love. That spirit in you,
like, because people were saying she sounds like somebody who's going through what do they call it when they're trying to conversion therapy. And if you notice, her eyes are always very dead, her effect is very flat,
no makeup on her face is like her, crazy.
And you look at her IG, like, she always looks like she can't quite get comfortable in her skin. Like, there are some pictures where she was trying to be very sexy, and then some pictures where she's getting her black belt, so she's clearly trying to show her strength. And then she has on makeup, no she doesn't, hair is done, hair is not done, she's natural, she's not, like, you can tell she's not comfortable in any things. So I don't even think I think she feels like she should be married to a man, like,
that's what the Bible says,
that's what books write, that's what she's supposed to do. I think people in her life have not let her be honest with how she's feeling, because even the last few videos that she's made, I keep pointing out to people, people like, it's terrible what he did to her. He is absolutely a sociopath and a narcissist.
He's a
like, he's a fuck nigga. But she isn't even talking about their marriage anymore. Like, she made a video the other day where she was like, what he did is what people are saying, I came to save him. Only Jesus Christ can save. What he did, and he's living with the repercussions. But you can't tell me I can't be healed or I'm in pain or I'm whatever. That's a lie from the pit of hell. What she's defending is her
lie.
Is that she's okay. What she's bothered by is that people are like, since you're clearly not okay. Because she needs to believe that she can pray away and believe away whatever the fuck is going on with her. Because that means she don't have to deal with it. Like, if you can say that everything is a demon or a spirit that can be cast out, if you can say that everything is just, it's just something that you just need, that Jesus can just take away. And then listen, y'all know I'm a Christian. My faith runs deep. Faith without works is dead. God put therapy in the realm for us to take advantage of it, right? Like, you have to reflect. So I believe that she needs to believe all the shit she's saying for her well-being. Because
she ain't got to deal with being in love with a best friend, Karen.
That chick is on the edge of a psychotic break. I swear for God. That
Derek was a real nigga, he would cut that gal loose.
He's not even paying attention. Like, he's just
tell that gal to go
in his car making videos.
He need to go on tell that gal, go on and spend more time with Alicia. This is what you want to do anyway. And Derek needs to go on and do what he want to do and fuck all these IG models.
Sean, please, Sean.
No, because if you look at the girls, the couple girls that have shown up, they the IG model types. So that's his vibe. Whatever, nigga, that's fine. That's your vibe. Go over there. Let your girl go on and be bisexual and enjoy her life. And y'all go cheering together.
That's a, well, we're making some wild assumptions here.
I'm talking complete shit.
Wild.
I will say I was very familiar with this guy in terms of who he was. I was not familiar with his videos because I don't engage in that level of just dumb shit. Like, that's just it's dumb shit. All of these relationship gurus and relationship experts, it's all predatory behavior. Absolutely. Lies right next to all of their shit.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it's
Steve
this,
Harvey, Kevin,
you know,
Samuels.
There's always these seminars, and there's always this hint of predatory behavior, and that shit is used. And I think her issues that she is trying to and needed to get through was very easy for him to identify. Yeah, as yeah. usable things that he can use to his advantage, right? Yeah. And I also think that this young, I was a little sad, right? Because I was a little saddened for her because I felt like her journey has been her journey, whatever that journey is. It's been hers. It's been locked sort of in this cage. And when he had to answer for his shit, instead of being a protective husband, as a husband should be,
he tried to use her as a shield.
He didn't try.
Well, he did.
100%. Like I said, he was basically, he did what Nino Brown did at that party with the little girl.
Yeah.
That's basically what he did with that woman.
Yep.
He picked her up and put her in front of them bullets, okay? Because now all of the angst and all of the conversation has shifted to her. Right? How she looks and what their situation is and all of that shit. The reality is that guys like Derek and guys like the Samuels dude and all of these other, the Chabies, all of that shit is based around, you know, a lot of women looking for adulation, confirmation, appreciation, and a lot of niggas also buy into that shit because they really looking for heroes.
Yeah,
okay?
That's what they're
looking for. Okay, and that's a part of this.
I'm looking for somebody to co-sign behavior that they know on some level probably isn't okay.
Yeah, and the reality here is like I didn't feel good about seeing that young woman be paraded while she is clearly dealing with some other shit. Now, I didn't know she was dealing with that level of stuff, but like even when you look at the video, it's like nigga, it looked like she was in the laundry room. It looked like it looked like she was in the laundry room, or she was watching her show with her tea.
It looked like
honey.
Music was playing in her head while he was talking.
And he just grabbed her and snatched her and put her on the couch.
Yeah. And again,
it was all for naught, right? It was all because we have allowed these people to have spaces to create, and I'm using air quotes here, they create brands, okay? They use these platforms as a way to earn a living. Mm-hmm. And that's really all this shit is. All this shit is content. Yep. And you niggas are out here lapping it up and eating it up. I would never listen to some niggas sitting in his car talking about a relationship. Like, nigga, why? For what? For what?
Why are you even in your car? And the mistress says that the house that he's usually in front of, there's a gray house that's behind him, like a white balcony. It's her fucking house. So he was like, he be making these videos. He made one of the videos from there like this past week. He was like,
because he's probably leaving there knowing he did some fuck shit.
Yeah.
And pulling over and making that video while it's on my spirit.
Right.
All that bullshit. And another thing too I want to reiterate is, I think, aren't they still in the South?
Yeah, they're in Atlanta.
Yeah. Are they in Atlanta? I knew they were in the South.
In Atlanta or... Yeah, I also, maybe not Atlanta. Maybe, you know, I was going to say...
I mean, they might be in the suburbs. They're in the Atlanta area.
Maybe their location has also not been very helpful for her to go through the progressions that she needs to go through, right? It's not like, you know, it's not like there are places where you can go and identify with people or work those things out or, you know.
Even though there's a large, you know, LGBTQ and or, you know, IA, et cetera, community in Atlanta for Black people, it's also still like the Bible Belt, and it's also still
of,
you know, Black religion, and like everything this chick posts, even these videos that she was posting from this white pastor that was about like the roots of lust and all this other stuff, I think people assume she's talking about him, and I'm like, she's not talking about him. She is talking about struggling through. I don't even know if there's one woman. I think she's just struggling through how she feels, because even when she was still trying to be on her dress-up shit, she was wearing, like, Steve Harvey suits and shit. Like, somebody said that. Somebody was like, I would cheat, too, if I came home and my girl was dressed like something crazy. Inka, what do you think of all this?
It just made me really sad. I think that dudes like that look for women like this, and it's a match made in heaven, because she ain't going nowhere. We know that.
And she's
not going to make a ripple. It just made me really sad.
Sad for her, especially for her, though.
Like, clearly she's dealing with some other worldly shit if she doesn't even like her daughter's, like, dark skin. Because that was in one of her Instagram captions.
Oh, word? I didn't know about that, too.
Bruh. He's obsessed with people with darker skin than her because, I mean, she says it's because she can't. Is the one thing in other women that she can't replicate. And I guess even though the type that we've seen to see, and that's the other thing, people are like, I don't get it because he seems to fuck with light-skinned girls. And that's why I'm like, it's not about him. Once again, there's also a thing where her father was dead and her father's dead. She feels like her father liked his second set of kids better than her. Like, it's like a lot. It's a lot. There's a lot.
And listen, in fairness, all of that could be and probably is legitimate.
Yeah,
right.
It's a lot of us have had either access to people who are open-minded that we love and we cherish, and we have been able to have conversations with them. We have been exposed to lifestyles and lives of people that have been wide-ranging. And not everyone is exposed to that. We often forget, Tom, that a lot of motherfuckers grow up in these one-stop-light towns.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
Which Tuskegee is, by the way. Which is why I need to know if he's from Tuskegee. The only thing in Tuskegee right now is Tuskegee.
It's Tuskegee. Yes. And that's kind of my point, right? Like, is that I mean, look, she has to figure that out, and hopefully she will. He is solidified as an awful nigga for using that as a shield for himself. It was a cowardly act. It was not manly at all in any way. And furthermore, nigga, nobody gave a fuck. Okay. Yeah. If your wife, that woman. Right. Your branding was about relationships and being this relationship guru. It was not as a married couple. OK, that was not a part of your branding. That was not a part of your business. So to even pull her into this was an absolute act of selfishness. It was an absolute act of serving her up.
And it's also because he has a new book out. I feel like if he didn't have a new book out, like right as this happened, this shit doesn't.
But also, I'm seeing screenshots of this nigga's online. He's like engaging with people who's flaming his wife. He's cracking jokes.
The split screen with the Kevin video. Like, it was too much.
Yo, that was the scariest.
Which video? The one where he talked about himself in third person?
Yes.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And use it kind of as a. I felt like the whole point of that was to try to get people off worrying about his wife, because he was like, but I want to talk about the wife. And yeah, it did look like maybe she was forced. But then, you know, they did the video afterwards and he explained that's just her personality. So now I understand. I was like, my nigga, you are insane.
A lot of niggas is in spirals, man. Like, this nigga is definitely one of them. I don't know where this is going to end up, but like, he's definitely in that fuck nigga spiral. And in a lot of ways, his fuck nigga spiral reminds me of Martell on Love and Marriage Huntsville. It's different situations. But the narcissism and the arrogance of both of them niggas on some, like, I don't care, I'm going to do whatever, and I'm going to outslick you niggas, even though I'm caught red-handed doing fuck nigga shit.
I'm doing this thing because you deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of that, like, that's he needs to be the fuck that nigga for this week, just based off the little snippet of conversation we saw that's gonna happen in Love and Marriage Huntsville next week. But go ahead.
No, I mean,
I was just gonna say, Sis said in one of her posts that there were times where she felt like she was very close to her own episode of Snap. And if somebody in her life is not trying to get her, not counsel, because that was one of the things I heard her say, that he was taking counsel and they were having counsel. What counsel means is you went to the old married couple at your church and they told you how they got through it, right?
But that happened on Love and Marriage Huntsville this week.
That's not counseling. You know, but old niggas be like,
Love and Marriage Huntsville this week, that's exactly what happened.
And then Mrs. Jenkins.
With Deacon CW and Sister... It's just Lula Bell.
Literally, that's what happened on Love and Marriage Huntsville this week. It's what happened. Like, there's a guy named Chris who's friends with Martell. They try to do some business together. Martell's shit is all fucked up, so the deal's falling through. And Chris and his wife, who's like an Auntie Lula Bell, literally, and they're not
very much like wearing a caftan.
Exactly. But they're not that much older than them. Like, they're like, say Martell and Mel are probably 35. They're probably like 43, 45. 42, they're not like 60 or nothing, but they act older. And literally what happened, Mel came to the house, they ambushed Mel and was like, yo, Martell's here. And she was like, what? Like, I just thought I was coming to see you. And they did this whole thing. Chris had cheated on her back in the day. And they got through it.
The whole shit was so wrong. Like, even the crack about Mel's outfit by Martell as soon as she walked in. It's like, I wouldn't have even stayed after that. Like, I know you have to film with people and make the show and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I wouldn't speak to that nigga. I would be like, talk to me through lawyers. Do this drop-off with the kids through your mom. Because he does not... It doesn't even feel like he means her well at this point.
He doesn't. He just wants to prove to everybody that she's wrong.
And did he ever mean her well?
True that. I don't know. True, because he don't act.
I mean, when somebody has a history of, like, we're not talking about, yo, he did something, it was fucked up, he got caught, there's some contrition here, he's clearly understanding that this is, you know, like, this is clearly a pattern, and this is long before the show, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how he talks to her, I've always said, man, how you deal with people is about your character. It has nothing to do with whether or not someone is willing to accept that behavior.
Yeah,
it's about how you feel about people. It's about how you act towards or think of people. It's how you respect people. Mm-hmm. And to me, when you just are consistently being a brute or being an ass or being dismissive to people, it just shows me that you really don't give a fuck about people in general. Yeah. Like, I get, like, this whole, I'm just keeping it real, and I'm just being, you know, I'm just being honest. Like, you
that's
can be honest.
Pay to be assholes.
Yes, you can be absolutely honest with people without being an asshole. Okay, yeah. It's been done, and it can continue to be done.
I think it takes a special kind of asshole to gaslight somebody in front of their face every time you talk to them.
Every time.
Every single time. Like, he's a liar. He didn't do anything.
And what he did was her fault.
And he never would have admitted to that baby if his mom didn't confirm it.
Exactly.
He would have acted like that shit wasn't happening.
What are you talking about? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And then she's sitting there in front of them, and you could tell. I'm sorry we're running on about this, but the scene was amazing.
Nah, it's
you
a lot of fuck niggas in the atmosphere.
Exactly. You could tell that the old lady and Chris had only been hearing Martell's side of everything. Because when Mel got there, her and the lady said they hadn't seen each other in a long time. She's like, oh, I ain't seen you in a while. How you been? Like, I've been doing this. But they had no conversation from Melanie's side about what's been happening. So they've been hearing from Martell.
And then Mel says what's happening, and immediately Tasha is like, well, is there any way you can compromise?
Yeah, can you swallow?
Bitch, what?
Swallow all this cheating and all the fucked up shit he's doing?
Did you hear what I just said? Like, this nigga tried to take my kids.
Mel blurts out about the baby. Tasha had no idea that he was having a baby with the side piece. So then by this point, Chris is sitting there like, oh, this going way left. And then Martell starts
thing
this fuck
about
shit.
Counsel and counseling. Like, this shit is not going to work if you're lying to the people that are trying to give you counsel.
Exactly.
That doesn't work.
Like, if you're just looking
tell
for
them
somebody,
tell them everything.
If you're just looking for somebody to convince,
to
the
be
other
on your side.
Side.
Exactly.
That's not the same shit. Counsel means you actually want to hear and take under advisement what people are telling you. I mean, one thing I do want to say about all the cheating shit, I've seen a whole lot of, between the Saweetie thing with Quavo and this, a lot of like the, well, all niggas cheat, it just is what it is. Like, poor Amina.
I saw that.
Amina Butterfly. For
popping up out of nowhere.
God bless her.
You should have sat there and ate your food, Amina.
Like, I quote retweeted, like, you and Tara made this
nobody
shit.
Nobody asked
extreme,
you.
Y'all made it an extreme sport. Like, you fucking
they was playing table tennis with the
nine
dick,
and ten
like,
back to back.
Babies and shit.
Like, yeah, like, that's too much. In the same apartment building, people running up and down the back stairs. Anyway, that was like some whole other shit. But I don't necessarily believe all men cheat, but I do believe that cheaters cheat regardless of whom they're with. Or what the situation is. They cheat if you're a boss bitch. They cheat if you're too submissive. They cheat if you're the quiet girl. They cheat if you're the sassy girl. They cheat if you hold them down because they think you ain't gonna do shit. They cheat if they feel. It doesn't take a lot for them to cheat. They always have a reason to cheat. They're going to cheat. So it's like so when you see a serial cheater coming, I think that even serial cheaters think they will change for a certain person. I do believe that cheaters cheat no matter who they're with. I don't believe
what.
Every man cheats, but that nigga Derrick Jackson is not gonna stop cheating. He's just
oh no, and neither is Martell.
Yeah,
neither is Martell. Melody's been throwing a glass at this nigga though.
I don't even watch the show. I can tell you that nigga's not gonna stop cheating. We also need to admit that there is narcissism and there's asshole, and there are also sociopaths. One in like 4 in every 100 people, 1 in every 25 people is a sociopath. Some of these niggas are sociopaths. That nigga's a sociopath.
I think Martella and Derrick Jackson are sociopaths.
Yeah, when I saw Derrick Jackson doing
and Marcel,
like, this nigga's a sociopath. Like, there's no, like, nah.
Sidebar on the Love and Marriage Huntsville, Inca. You saw Marceau was trying to see if he could sniff them Melanie's drawers, right?
Marceau hitting on Mel was a surprise I did not
see. That was crazy. I was like, my nigga, you know they're filming this, right?
I won't say hitting on her, but definitely a heavy
definitely foot throwing him through the line in the water. Just threw it out there.
That
like,
was a lot.
I was like, nigga, you know they're filming this scene.
He also knows who he's married to, and he can explain that away.
Yeah,
it felt like in some scenes with the two of them, it feels like he's raising her almost.
Yeah, he is.
Like,
yes,
this is like you started the argument, and she's just kind of backs down. It's just, like,
you're right.
Tired of bad marriages on TV.
Yeah, a piece of Derek Jackson. I mean, not piece of that nigga. Fuck that nigga. Fuck nigga of the week, Derek Jackson.
Speaking of though, bad marriages. I started watching Married at First Sight, and why the fuck is that show 2 hours every week? Is that
really standard? Doesn't happen.
But that's what the call was too, though. 90 Day Fiancé is like 2 hour episodes.
Hours? They do the same kind of. They repeat a bunch of stuff you've already seen. They stretch shit out way too long. It does not need to be that long at all. But once you get past that, it's like,
oh, it's great. It's a great watch. It's just. I don't know. It makes me sad.
That really nigga is a sociopath too.
I just think this is a great first marriage for all of those people. They're going to get divorced and then go on and find
and be right their second real time. Person.
There Hopefully, you go.
Because usually by Start the time they sign up for Married at First Sight is because they feel like they haven't been able to find love in other ways. So some of them might be ready to
birth. But some of them are like 26.
I know. Yeah, I think they have an age cap. I haven't seen
Why y'all getting married?
The oldest person I've seen is this season in their late 30s.
26, nigga, what?
Right.
26 and you gave up? That's
I've given up on finding love any other kind of way.
I'm 26. Yeah,
but also the one girl, I'm like, you're a flight attendant. It's probably going to be hard for you to date. Right.
Just fuck a bunch of niggas. Have a good time. Fuck a bunch of niggas. Take a bunch of news.
She's the one who falls in love with everybody.
What made
it really sad is like her husband alternatively has like never said I love you to anybody, right? So they're already it's already like a setup. But
he's in his 40s, right? He's older.
Oh no, that's another girl. The older dude is different. This is young blonde girl and the guy who's like half Mexican or whatever. They're doing everything but fucking right now. And she's really frustrated. But the problem is
why they're not fucking?
He's super Christian, and he wants to make sure they're friends first. And my thing is, like, y'all are married. Y'all could actually just do
it. They are married?
Yeah,
ain't no quicker way to friendship.
Oh, marriage
the first time you
and they not fucking?
Married.
Come on, man. He's going there, man. Him,
it's sacred, right?
Don't but tear them drawers her, up. You know you're going to become friends by fucking.
But I thought that. But y'all know what? I changed my mind on it, because for her, the sex comes first, and she actually said that sex has never meant anything to her but sex. She said that she's never made love, so she doesn't understand any sacredness in it. And I was like, oh, you actually might need to wait. Because, like...
Legit. It has only been a month. So, I get it. But
she said
that show is too fucking
hours. They sleep in the bed every night?
Apparently, they fucking and
poking together?
And everything. Yeah.
Yeah. They live together. It's a marriage. Jack.
But she's starting to feel... Yeah. She's starting to feel a little insecure, though.
You don't need to have me a counselor on this motherfucker.
Let's move on.
I want to mention another show on OWN that I know none of y'all are watching, and I wouldn't expect you to watch. There's a show called Delilah that comes on.
Oh, is that the show with Jill Marie Jones?
Yeah, it's really good. It's a really good show.
I just heard about it.
I'm scared that it's going to be one of those shows on OWN, because OWN will have these shows like that David Makes Man show and a couple of shows. You know, the OWN, I don't, Brooke could explain this better, but the OWN shows look like they're really expensive to make. Like, they look really, you know, they look good. They like, they're going to location, and, you know, they're not cheapy type of shows. I'm talking about the scripted television side of it. And so I think what ends up happening is, like, they become expensive, and then the ratings don't match the expense, and they can't kind of justify keeping it going, and I'm scared it's going to happen on this one. This show's based in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's about a woman who's a lawyer. Well, her and Jill, they're both lawyers, but they're friends from college, but they don't work together. They kind of work. Jill works at a big-ass law firm, and Delilah is like has her own little firm, and it's a case about some stuff with the army, and Delilah's brother got hurt, and da da da. But it's a really good show. It's well acted. It's a compelling story so far. It's about 3 or 4 episodes in. I'm enjoying it. I'm scared it's not going to see a season 2, but you got some free time, check it out. It's a really good show.
Did you check the Bell Collective reunion?
Of course I did. Ignorance bliss.
I was really excited. Like I enjoyed the way the couch on the right side handled their situation.
Because the couch on the left side was ignorant as fuck. Ignorant as fuck. Marie and what's the name of the teacher?
All of it's ignorant. It's just but ignorant. I mean,
ignat.
And I enjoyed their beautiful gowns.
Yeah, beautiful gowns. There's a part 2 this week, so we'll see. But that was important. The husbands come out and find out where one girl's husband got the outside baby, and you know. So yeah, it's that down south.
Bad shit. Marriages. All right.
Bad marriages everywhere. I wanted to mention. You know what? Let's jump into verses because it's a lot going on. So this week we had Ghostface versus Ray. I got to see parts. I was kind of in and out because I was working. But the parts I saw looked enjoyable. They had decent numbers. Like I said, kind of averaged about 100K on the gram.
Well,
I
don't know if also, they're not focused on Instagram numbers anymore.
I figured that. It's the Triller numbers.
The Triller partnership has started. Mm-hmm. And y'all know about, let our listeners know, I moderated, Versus' 1 year anniversary was yesterday. And I moderated the 1 year anniversary celebration.
On the Clubhouse, right?
With Daytwan, who's a friend to the show, and another writer star on Clubhouse on Monday. And Bobby, who is the co-founder and co-owner of Trilla, was on with us. And they were actually worried about being able to handle the traffic. Really? So they were actually happy, like... They were worried that it would be too much for them.
It would like crash the site of crash
on the infrastructure. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if I don't know what numbers look like there, but whatever it was, he was very happy because what they're most worried about is viewers at home having a clear, uninterrupted, glitch-free viewing experience. And whatever they hit, they were able to maintain that. But he admitted that they were very, very nervous going in that they might not be able to handle the traffic.
It seems like from, you know, watching, internet talk or whatever you want to call it, people seem to really enjoy that.
Yeah,
episode.
It seemed like it was a lot of, it's Ray and Ghost. If you put Ray and Ghost in a room together and it's not enjoyable,
something's wrong with you, exactly.
You did something wrong.
Because them niggas is ridiculous.
They're just the funniest motherfuckers in hip-hop, aside from Red and Meth, when you put them together.
Who are coming up.
right.
Yeah, who are coming up. So
after that, and I think we might owe Versus a little bit of an apology because we were giving them a bit of a eulogy and they announced a slate that feels very
The upcoming episodes are crazy.
So go ahead.
I don't owe them an apology. I do not.
So coming up Easter Sunday, which is next weekend, Easter Sunday evening, is a big throwback joint that we're all looking forward to. Earth, Wind & Fire, Elements.
And the Isley Brothers.
Versus the Isley Brothers. I hate to kind of say, it is Versus, but it's going to be more of a celebration.
They're all supposed to be celebrations.
Yeah.
We just call you Versus. And the guys have said that again. It's not a battle.
Yeah, it's not a battle.
It's been a battle since Sean and Dream.
Yeah, it's been
a celebration. They took that off the table.
Yeah.
They are celebrations.
Yeah. So that's going to be great because both of those catalogs are vast. And black and part of our lives and cookouts and, you know, and birthday parties and whatever else you want to call it. And I'm really excited to see both of those artists just do their thing.
Even though it's not gonna be warm here yet, I think I have to wear a white linen. I think I have to.
For that, I mean, that's a straight up Essence Fest set. Like that.
Last night at Essence Fest, absolutely.
That is absolutely
Sunday night at Essence all day. I really think I got to plan a menu. Like, I asked Mr. Isley, because Mr. Isley and Verdine White and Auntie Patty all popped in towards the end of the verses. And I asked Mr. Isley, if he knew like how excited every, you know, how excited the announcement had made everybody. And he was just, you know, he was very humble about it. But then I asked Auntie Patty what she was cooking to watch. And she did like the Loretta Devine joint. She was like, you know, I'll make some fried chicken and some greens and some beans and some cornbread and some macaroni and cheese and some biscuits. And like, she just kept naming shit.
She's like, ham.
Yeah.
The ham.
A little light.
Like, a little something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be awesome. And awesome. Then it was announced that they're doing Method Man versus Red Man. I don't know what day that is.
420.
Okay. Oh, yeah, of course. Perfect.
Of course.
And that's going to be awesome because those guys are both
perfect date.
Super charismatic guys. Yeah. And
Sean got his hand up.
Go ahead, bro.
I just want to ask, when did the numbers not count anymore? Because they counted all the way up until they didn't count. So I just want to know, what is the demarcation of, and understand when I say this, is because I've always poked fun at those numbers. I've always said
across all
because I've always felt like they were inflated. I always felt like they were ridiculous. I always felt like what they did was they really basically counted something that took place on one social media site on a metric and then counted it as it would be reposted as a unique individual thing, which I think is
so
utterly bullshit.
Said at one point they were getting too caught up in the numbers and away from the point.
Well, I would be very interested as to, because that's a chicken or the egg question for me,
right,
and this is no shot at Swiss. My question is that a chicken or the egg? Did you guys become no longer obsessed with numbers as numbers dwindled, or was or did you guys recognize, because you haven't, the essence of the show is still very different, right?
But I feel like this new slate seems to be trying to come back to the heart of it.
I hope it does. And I've said I've had my questions about that, but I've always said that I was very happy for them to have gone on, you know, to take verses to do this. If they're able to compensate the people that helped build that platform, that would have been, you know, that's great, particularly for people who are not touring right now. But I'm just always interested at when numbers don't matter anymore.
Right. That's
because
fair.
When numbers don't matter, when they always matter, and then they, nah, you know, it don't really matter now. Like, nigga, you've been pulling up in the new car every year, flashing and showing. Now your shit 8 years old and now it don't matter.
Give me where I gotta go. That's all that counts.
I thought it mattered. Right.
You know, That's fair.
And the last thing I'll say is Trilla has to say that whether they're happy or not, right? Like they just entered an agreement. They just entered a binding, long-term relationship that for them is bigger than Versus. Mm-hmm. It's about Swiss and Tim really bringing elements of Black culture and trying to drive to that network, which is perfectly fine, fair, and understandable. They're not going to say, it's the same thing we talk about with Netflix. Netflix doesn't release numbers. Usually Netflix doesn't release numbers unless it's like some crazy number.
Right.
Then Netflix releases the numbers.
No, I got you. Like, and when I asked, was the question that prompted him saying that was, I asked him if they ever felt kind of bad about the participants who had been part of Versus before the numbers started skyrocketing. And they were like, no, we want to stop getting caught up in the numbers. It's not about the numbers. It made us get away from what Versus was supposed to be when they were putting it together. But one other thing that they did say that I think you guys would be interested in, especially given our conversations, you know, early on there was like a kind of understanding that there was this producer group chat that they were pulling people from to put the pairing together. And Swizz and Tim both said that they were, even as like numbers were growing and stuff, they were getting a lot of resistance from people
that didn't want to do it.
I wonder too, did that come after the Sean Dream situation?
Well, did it come after?
Because Sean and Dream were like the third one.
I think it might have come
that's after, my point, right? Like, so I'm saying, Well, it could be. It could be. I just would be. I would be curious. I mean, listen. Obviously, I'm more about the sort of the back end stuff. Like how did that actually work itself out? Mm. And listen, he's never gonna have that conversation with anyone, which is fair, right? But that would just be my question. Like, when did you start seeing that resistance? Like you said, was it the issue with Teddy and having the technical issues? Was it the issue of feeling like, oh, this is a beef thing, or I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
And there was the issue of the beef thing, which was why it was so hard for them to get women, which is why, and I actually even asked Sean and he evaded the question because I was like, Sean, your verses was the verses that changed the verses rules. Like after that, like y'all shit was so crazy.
Oh, Sean Garrett, he was there too?
Yeah, Sean was one of the first people there, and I didn't think that nigga was going to ever shut the fuck up. But
he likes to talk now.
Oh, he likes to talk, and then answer my actual question. But after Sean and Dream was when it was like, this is not real beef. You know, you gotta go 20 rounds. You can't just play songs all goddamn night, and you gotta keep it to 90 minutes a song. Because him and Dream both was just playing like whole 4 or 5 into the damn post lose and shit. So Sean didn't really answer that question, except to say that he had dental surgery and that's why he was loopy. Mm. Which was not the answer.
Always no. Diabetes jacking up?
that's what I called you a nigga. My diabetes jacking up. I also read today that Dr. Dre had actually agreed to do it. And then when Teddy had all the glitches.
Yeah, no, I said I throw that
oh,
in.
Oh, you wrote that? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And Dre was like, nah, I ain't fucking with this shit.
Dre was there, white well. He was on. He was like, he hadn't fully agreed. He was right there. He was
talking. They was talking.
And then he was like, nah, B, like, I can't fuck with that. And Swiss was like, God damn it. And that's when Swiss started looking at how they were going to go. That's what drove the Apple Music shit. Yeah, like, we have to have a better platform. But they're still not going to abandon IG.
I wonder if they'll get Dre back at some point. But anyway, and then May 8th, which is, I thought it was Mother's Day. It was
actually the day before Mother's Day.
Day before Mother's Day, they have SWV versus Escape, which I'm finding interesting in just, again, my bullshit research. I'm finding very interesting because it's literally cutting across the Mason-Dixon. Like, girls from the North are like, SWV gonna mop them. Girls from the South was like, fuck that, Escape. Like, it's
literally... All I see, actually, girls all I'm girls. Seeing, and maybe it's about aging, all I'm seeing is everybody... This comes up often. People always act like SWV is like this far superior group than Escape. And I'm like, y'all are really thinking that Coco was a better singer than Candy, who is not even the lead of Escape?
Yeah, because Candy wasn't the lead,
I don't even know what Lily and Taj sound like, first of all. Secondly, all four Escape members rotated, even though the Scott sisters were technically like the leads.
They all had parts.
Escape members lead at some point. Mm-hmm. Candy is actually probably at this point the weakest thing, because I think even Tiny's a great singer, but she just doesn't sing that much. Yeah. Remember that. But today on Twitter, I did a whole thread about them last year and showed like live clips from recently and all this other shit. Because I was like, where do y'all get this from that Escape can't sing? All four members of Escape sing. And I also don't know why people, the same people that say that Brandy's the vocal Bible, think Coco is like the best fucking singer.
And love Coco.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the obsession with Coco's voice. But anyway, today I was like,
no, I understand it. Coco's a mom. I'm not saying she's Whitney, but
she's a
Coco's
great singer. But
in her own right. She's a monster.
Whitney Houston. But anyway,
she's a monster though. You can go.
But I was saying today, like, y'all sleep on Escape. I think that SWV has more nostalgic hits, right? Mm. So you may hear more of their stuff now, but Escape has more actual hits, if you just want to go across the charts, then SWV on almost every Billboard chart. And like, I was like, y'all don't remember cuts. Like, y'all don't remember Do You Want To. Y'all not thinking of Who Do I Run To. Y'all not thinking of You're My Little Secret. Because saying Escape ain't got hits is saying, it's like saying Jermaine Dupri ain't make hits. Yeah. And you know, that's not like, SWV does not have a Diane Warren song. Escape does. You know, like, it's, you just don't hear it in the party after Poison. That's it. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. People are just thinking of Let's Kick It. I mean, Just Kick It. And that's it. I think they're going to be surprised. And then when Candy pulls out her shit.
Yeah, that's
there you go.
Yeah, they're gonna bring out some of the candy stuff with the bills and those scrubs and.
Or like I said, even like the pink joint or you and that or her own hit. Don't think I'm not like you know what I mean. Like it's not even just the hot shit. I was just like y'all sleep on them. I don't understand where that started at people sleeping on Escape. I'm not saying anybody's gonna blow anybody out, but acting like it's gonna be a mop is ridiculous.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun.
And Escape has great features too, by the way. Like
it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be some fun weeks coming, and I'm sure.
Oh, and there's another one on Mother's Day that they haven't revealed yet.
I'm about to say that I'm sure there's gonna be more reveals coming.
That's like the next day, so I'm very curious as to who that is.
It's gonna be somebody old school. They're not gonna do no new people on Mother's Day.
Then there's some rematch after that.
Yeah, so
I like this whole teasing situation. I enjoy it.
The Mother's Day one, I have no idea what it's going to be, but I would bet a bunch of money it's going to be, you know, like
somebody old.
Anita Baker versus or somebody like that. Somebody from the older generation that the moms can kind of, you know,
group. Yeah.
We're going to keep tuning in. We're going to see what y'all do. Verses and you know, God bless. I watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Did you watch it? This is very different. This is very different than you know, WandaVision in that it's way more just action adventure-y. Well, the first episode, then it wasn't like a slick kind of you know thing like they did with the old TV shows and all that. You know, it was cool. Yeah. But it was more like a Marvel movie kind of. What do you think?
I really liked it. I like that they got to the story right away. WandaVision lost a couple people in the first three episodes because they didn't know what the fuck was going on. But this was like, oh, he's still being Falcon out here.
Yeah.
And still, you know, saving the world one person at a time and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And there's this whole other like, oh, but he's also black in the Marvel universe. And this is what this means after the reverse snap happens.
Exactly.
Which I really, really love. So. Yeah.
I love how they keep because they didn't get to really do that much in Endgame, I guess, or Ultron. Endgame was the last one, right? They didn't really get to kind of discuss the impact of the reverse snap.
Right. And we got a little bit of it in WandaVision, but that wasn't the real world.
Exactly. But getting more now. It's like, 5 billion people came back. You know what I'm saying? So niggas is like,
that's insane.
So the whole world is like upside down because they got to figure out how to fit 5 billion people back into the world.
I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited that Winter Soldier is really a 100-year-old nigga in like a 28-year-old nigga body.
And he talks about it. And I love that he talks about it. He's like, I've been 100 years and I've seen all this shit and da da da. And I also loved how they slipped how the current world is using this reverse snap in all kind of ways, including racist ways.
Because
when they went to the bank to. Because Falcon is from Louisiana, New Orleans, where Anthony Mackie's actually from. He's from Louisiana.
Right. He lives there.
Yeah, he's from there. He grew up there. So he goes and they have a boat and a family thing. And they try to get a loan to save the business. And the banker, who's a fucking trying to get selfies and shit, then says, yo, like, you haven't had no employment in 5 years.
Right.
He's like, because I wasn't here.
Like, what's your income? It's like, my nigga, I'm a superhero. Like, I can pay for it.
Yeah.
But he's not trying to hear. I just thought it was really interesting. Those writers over there are
on point.
Brilliant.
They're on point. Yeah. I fucks with them. So, we're going to definitely keep an eye on that one. Y'all can go ahead and talk about Crypt Camp because I didn't get to see it, but I know y'all are excited about it.
Inca can go.
I think
Inca said she's going to start crying.
All right. Well,
we can talk about it. It's
okay.
Okay. Right. So, in the 70s, using the term handicap, blah, blah, blah. We have to remember it's a different time.
The term used in the
documentary.
Yes. Yep.
Let me preface this by saying a lot of things I'm about to say might be problematic in a 2021 lens.
Okay.
But the documentary takes place over the last 40 years and is basically about how these kids who were teenagers in early 20s went to this camp every summer. And the camp was for disabled kids. And out of that camp... What?
I think it was in Woodstock, New York.
It was at the same time as Woodstock.
But it was in the Catskills. Oh, it
was in the Catskills.
Yeah. But it was this kid that was, or not kid, a camp that was run by special needs people for special needs kids to just be. And out of that group of kids came the legislation that we use for special needs today, which is the, what is it? Americans with Disabilities Act,
right?
Which, you know, simple things like in a store, everything has to be 3 feet apart for wheelchairs to fit. That shit didn't exist.
Access,
in the 70s, ramps, 80s, and all 90s. That stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to have handicap restrooms.
And it really,
even employment protection. Yeah. You know?
It goes through their fight, their demonstrations, how they shut down New York City and DC streets with their wheelchairs and, you know, had this great big sit-in. And how Ronald Reagan continues to fuck everybody with what he did.
At every turn.
And
The reason I was getting emotional was obviously I have a kid who is differently abled, possibly. She's too young for some of the testing that they have, blah, blah, blah. But it just goes to show people are really unkind, and it must really suck to not be able to be your full self. Or simple things like just the kids who had issues speaking, how everybody was totally quiet. You get emotional. Just waiting for them to finish their sentence, which is something we totally take for granted because we can all speak. But like, imagine how many times they get like talked over.
Yeah, cut off. Or
the amount of things that they're told that they can't do. So just like, seeing that was just, it was super eye-opening for me. You know, I'm on this whole charge now. I'm, like, talking to the school district and shit, like, what are you going to do? And so, yeah. Anyway.
It was interesting for me to watch because my mom's background is not just in early childhood development, but she worked for the State Department of Education for the Office of Special Needs. So hers is more from really kind of like a cognitive development aspect, but it still has always kept me in mind of you know, neuroatypical
neurodiversity,
thank you, the terms change very often and also like, you know, differently able or disabled people around with disabled or differently abled or a lack of ability, which are things I'm still thinking about. But the thing that was dope about the camp is that some people watching the footage now would actually clutch pearls a little bit, allies would, because the entire purpose of the camp was like, we literally will give you the assistance that you need to be able to move, function, et cetera, but we're not treating you differently here at all. Like, if you on the softball team, get your ass up the bat. We're not throwing soft, we're not throwing careful, we're not doing whatever. And like, it, like, there was an outbreak of crabs. There was like an outbreak of cat crabs because this was the first time a lot of them had like boyfriends and girlfriends, and everybody was fucking. You know what I mean, like that.
Bruh. Or even a lot of times
they was fucking. Bruh. Like, they was getting it, my nigga. Yeah. Like, for real, yo. They was basically. Let me just. I don't mean to cut you off, now, but what was fascinating to me is that we see people as adults that have special needs, and, you know, we often don't think of them going through regular childhood shit.
Right.
Right. And it was incredible because I found myself feeling like, you know, have I actually sort of engaged in a way to allow, like, there was one woman, she had, I could not remember her name.
Oh, the woman who had, she had abdominal pain, and they assumed she had appendicitis, and literally took her appendix out, a healthy appendix, before getting around to giving her a vaginal exam, she had gonorrhea.
She had gonorrhea.
They just assumed, and this is because she's like 19. She's done with college. They just assume it couldn't possibly be anything sexually transmitted because obviously, I think she had cerebral palsy maybe. And they were like,
that's what she had. And she basically said, I love the fact that they, you know, she was not, she used very, very fucking basic language. She was like, they thought nobody wanted to fuck me.
Yeah,
like, she was like, I was proud of myself for a minute. She was like, I've been fucking this guy for a while.
Yeah, but it pushed her. She's from the Bronx. She said it pushed her to go back, get her master's in, it's like sexual...
Human sexuality.
And now she's like a scholar. Like, she's like a noted scholar.
Her husband, I think her name was Jan or June. Yeah.
Her husband, who she met at the camp, who also has cerebral palsy, is a bank vice president. Like, you know, it's just, it's amazing. Because I'm thinking, like, these people would have never had this level of confidence and agency and... you know, meeting partners and just all of this. And even one guy was saying, like, until the year he went to camp, he wore a diaper. And right before he went to camp, he had surgery. And, like, he's a paraplegic. Right before he went, he has one leg. And right before he went to camp, he got a surgery, but it required him to have, like, a colostomy bag to, you know, divert his urine and everything. And he said that he was feeling so very awkward with it because he was still getting used to it, and sometimes it would leak and all that stuff, and he's feeling self-conscious. But then he was like, but at camp, everybody had something.
Yo, it was
whatever. Like, nobody was even paying attention.
It was so eye-opening.
It also showed, man, that there were a couple other things, too, really briefly. One, when they took over the state house in San Francisco, they didn't anticipate doing it. But when they'd gotten in there, they recognized that, like, basically, like, yo, we got them on the ropes. We can't leave now. Mm-hmm. So this is a protest that they really did almost spur it, not even almost, it was spur of the moment.
Right.
Do you know who fed them? The Panthers.
The Black Panthers.
They called the fucking Panthers, and the Panthers about 3 or 4 days came over there with hot food, meals.
Because they cut the electricity so that they couldn't cook, so that they couldn't.
Yeah, they couldn't do anything.
Wow, that's crazy.
And also, mind you, again, these are people with limited or no mobility, right? And people who have caregivers on a regular basis. So they didn't have easy access to bathrooms. They're not bathing properly, but they're sleeping on the floor.
A local salon owner came in with a ton of like shampoo and conditioner to like wash their hair and just kind of, I guess they were kind of taking bird baths, shit like that. And it was, so the other thing that I found very interesting, there was a deadhead, like a dude who literally, all he did was fucking smoke weed, play his guitar in his wheelchair, and go see, and go, nigga, and listen, he went to the shows, bruh.
Yeah.
Like, they was like, dude, he would get to the shows. Bruh, they live such incredible lives, and what I loved most about this documentary was that oftentimes we hear and see this from a able person's perspective, and we're talking about them, and we're not necessarily hearing from them and their perspective, and so you've got this incredibly engaged. These folks are I don't mean to say these folks, but the perception is that they will live life challenged, and you can also tell, and there's a very clear, they had families who did not abandon them. Like at that time, it was not uncommon for a child to have special needs to be abandoned. And so we all know, well, most of us know, there's a very famous episode, expose that Geraldo Rivera did years ago at the Willowbrook psychiatric space. Yeah. And they talk about that. And they talk about how they didn't know that existed, because in their space, in their atmosphere, they were cared for.
They got support.
They did. Yeah. So they didn't know that people were just basically taking their kids, dropping them off, and the, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. In that time, it was almost courageous for you to keep a baby that would be differently abled.
Absolutely.
I will say, the one thing I will say about Black people, as terrible as we are about mental health, maybe because we couldn't afford it, we just put that cousin in the back room, but they was around. You knew that, like, cousin
fed him.
Cousin Barry in the back. You know, he don't really talk. Mm-hmm. He smells
like... Stay with Big Mama.
Where the kids at?
Get them kids down there.
You better leave Jerome alone.
Or alternatively, be like, they don't mean no harm. Just...
Yeah, all right. Yeah, all right. Push the chair out there. Yo, play nice with them now. Yo, be careful.
Go get him an icy.
go get him an icy. Oh, peace to my Aunt Lizzie Lou, who used to sell icies. Oh, my God. I'm gonna watch this though, because I know it's a very popular doc. I want to close the show and mention one more doc. What's the operation?
Operation Varsity Blues.
Varsity Blues. Yes, yes, yes. So this is a very interesting doc, also on Netflix. About the college admissions scandal that happened like what, last year, 2 years ago. Recent, like super recently?
19, like late 19?
Yeah.
Even is time? I don't know.
Yeah, what's time? What's that? I told you, time is a man-made construct. But anyway.
71.
Exactly. I'm 27. So anyway, so this is, first of all, it's a very interesting doc the way it's done, because what they have is, because this was a federal case, they have tons and tons of wiretaps. You know, emails and stuff too that they had, that they, the people who made the doc got access to. And so, but what they do, they don't play them. They have people acting out the conversation. So basically, like, if somebody was on the phone, the main guy's name is Rick. Is it Rick Springer, Sean?
Rick Singer.
If somebody's on the show on the phone with Rick Singer, they have a guy who looks like whoever the guy was, and they have Matthew McConaughey actually plays. I mean, not Matthew McConaughey. Matthew.
Matthew Modine.
Matthew Modine. My fault. Matthew Modine plays Rick Singer, and they're acting out the conversations, but they are the actual transcripted conversations. And so the documentary is kind of about Rick and how he kind of got in. And then they do touch on Olivia Jade, who was very, you know, famous on YouTube and stuff like that. But she's not the focus of the doc. They have a part of her, but they just talking to, they basically have, you know,
it's about the wider people. Operation.
Yes, about the whole operation and who he was. Go ahead.
It's about how, so usually with FBI investigations, with any kind of RICO or criminal enterprise kind of things, they start at the bottom and kind of prosecute those guys and try to get them to flip. Here, they started with the mastermind, with Rick Singer, and then let it trickle down to the families and the other people that were involved.
And he set everybody up. He
was eager to tell on these
moments. He told that on was... everybody, like right away. Right away, he told on everybody. And all go ahead, Sean.
I was, and I am still fascinated that attorneys and titans of industry of finance did not think that this was, at minimum, that this was fraud, right? Like, that at minimum, this was going to be wire fraud or bank fraud, like any, like I was fascinated, and the FBI agent said that. He said, you would be surprised what people will talk about on the phone when they don't think we're listening. And all of these conversations, like, dude, one of the moms was just ragging on the kid, like, basically it was like, she need all the help she can get.
I got to do this because she's dumb.
Best part of this was him. There was one guy who said, hey, I gave Cornell $750,000 as a donation. And Singer basically laughed at him. Yeah. Like, dude, like, that shit is literally ashtray money. Like, people are giving $30 and $40 million and putting up buildings to get their kids in through what they, so it, it just briefly too, there are three ways. There's mm-hmm. the front door, which is a kid getting on, in on their own merit. There's the back door, in which you make this enormous donation, in which these schools basically let your kid in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, i.e. sort of the Dr. Dre shit, you know, people talked about with the USC, right? And then there's what he did was created the side door, which was basically having these parents and having this money funded through sports programs mm-hmm. that would allow entry into the school.
Exactly.
So that's why you see or having someone take a test for you
yeah.
for your kid, which is basically on the lower end, which is what Felicity Huffman was guilty of, was pleaded guilty to, which was paying. That's why the number was so low. She only paid like 15 grand. And I'm saying only 15 grand because relatively speaking to
the amount world, they were in that paying, world, 15 grand
that was no money. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's ultimately what it was. But yeah, everybody basically flipped and told, you know why? Because you're not criminals. Okay.
Exactly.
And getting your SEC license pulled, getting your law license pulled, you know what I'm saying? Going to do a 1-3 in motherfucking Leavenworth, ain't that sexy. Okay.
Exactly.
And guess what? You're not the Mexican mob, I'm telling.
Exactly. And they talked about Jared Kushner. They talked about his dad
making the contribution, and by all accounts, they were like, you know, Jared was a very average student.
Yeah,
he was a very average student, or you know, nothing particularly special about him. But they basically confirmed how we knew how the sausage was made, and this is just another confirmation of how it's made.
Also found fascinating when they talked about, and they didn't go in deep because this was the doc wasn't about this, but they talked about how they rank schools. And they said they basically rank schools just based on cash. Like,
well, they and they're so another thing that they do is their acceptance rate, mm-hmm. which is why you see such low acceptance rates, right? Like that becomes a part of the lore. It's you know, like we always talked about, you know, it's a reason they only make 100 of these cars, right? Because the going rate and the sexiness of it being exclusive, you know, kind of draws the cream of the crop or the people to it. And so that's another part. And again, none of those rankings didn't start until like 1989.
Yeah.
So basically, like, barring your obvious, well-known Ivy Leagues and sort of that category, sort of like sub-Ivy that we all kind of know.
Like Stanford.
Like Stanford is not an Ivy, but we've all known that to be like that
exactly.
right below the Ivies.
Exactly.
You know, outside of that, you know, you just fucking went to school.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was very interesting. They had to show clips of kids, you know, getting in, but they show what you don't usually see is kids not getting in.
And I can tell you, as someone who has dealt with a high school senior mm-hmm. who has dealt with the anxiety and the angst and the disappointment of feeling like, that's a very real thing. And I think mm-hmm. it's also vital for parents to have these very real conversations. You know, I think oftentimes we want to encourage our children, and we do so at times, and I'm not speaking about a particular parent, but at times we can do that to their detriment.
Absolutely.
Right? Like God bless, right? But you haven't taken an AP course and you got a 2.8. Okay. Yeah. Stanford is probably not letting you in.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Like so unless you got a 2.8 with no AP, and you tell me that you run a 40 in 4.2 or you 6'10, you know, 230 pounds, and you know what I'm saying? Like, we've got to have these conversations, because clearly some of these, because it wasn't like the disappointment we saw here was like, these kids were like, yo, I've basically been busting my ass the entire 2 years to like do this and get this and do this. And it was all for naught.
Yeah.
And they feel dejected. Like, they feel totally fucking worthless, man. And that to me is a parenting thing. That to me you know, making sure that your kids have realistic goals and expectations that are attainable. Because I can promise you.
Not putting all that kind of pressure, I think, on your kids. Because one thing, like the acceptance emails and all that stuff, I've always, like, my parents, parents definitely, it was important to them that I go to school. It was never even a question, but it wasn't so much like you need to go to this school versus this school. There was one school that was on their absolutely not list because they just didn't feel like it was, they felt like it was substandard and it was a school I wasn't considering anyway. But I watched like, because I was in AP classes, I watched like the kids, the white kids in my class, like just tormented over the point, the 10 mark of the decimal point towards, and like what was their rank gonna be and what was their this gonna be. And I was like, there's no way y'all are enjoying your senior year. Like, y'all are fucking stressing yourselves the fuck out. And I wonder how much of a difference it really made, like, now 30 years later where we are in our lives. Did it really make that much of a difference?
Not
you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm just like, why? And I am admittedly one of those kids who, you know, I was a B student most of the time because I didn't do shit. If I actually applied myself, I could have done some whole, like, I was AP and a B student and I didn't do shit. If I actually,
I had a job in high school. I was trying to get this money and get out of
here. I had a job. The boys, there was a lot happening with the boys. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like,
I was trying to get Chick-fil-A breakfast third period. I was not in that, like, that senior year.
And if I had applied myself, I probably could have done, like, completely different, which my parents told me all the time. But I was also like, y'all, I'm trying to have a good time. Like, you know?
Yeah. But what I found interesting with some of these kids, it looked like to me, like, this thing has become a thing amongst, I'm not saying parents don't apply pressure at all, but the way it was presented in this film, it's like this thing is a thing amongst the kids.
Yes,
like,
it's IG.
It's all of that.
Acceptance videos and shit. But I'm saying this for parents to be like, relax. Fuck.
Yo, you know, chill, like, the fuck out. Like, like, listen.
Yeah, like, I don't understand.
When you go to undergrad school.
Yeah, I don't understand Jade's parents, like, pushing college on her. She didn't even like high school.
Because fucking drop out. Because that is a sexy conversation piece. Okay, and I've been around those. You know, where does your kid go to school? It's basically an extension of, well, what do you do? That's really what that shit becomes.
Exactly. And Amelia Jade was interesting to me because, you know, like you said, she was making money in high school with her makeup and all that type of shit.
Yo,
and she was very,
that is so understated. She was making wild bread. She had the
Sephora, she had the Sephora sponsorship and all. But she was very self-aware. They showed her doing an interview and she said, "Oh, my parents only want me to go to the college because they didn't. Neither one of my parents went to college." So she's go ahead, Sean. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and yes, that comes into play.
Yeah, because had the parents gone to college, they would know. You know, my stepdad told me really early. He was like, college is actually easy. It's just time management. He was like, you're going to college to learn how to live as an adult. There's not really shit there you can't learn somewhere else. He told me that. And it's like, the thing about college is that people act like, yes, granted, you can go to college if you have great professors and you actually pay attention, you're going to learn things. But it really is more about learning systems than it is about anything else. So if you're already making money, like, college really isn't for everybody.
Yeah. I like Olivia Jade. I like Olivia Jade in this because, like I said, she was not like,
honest and not apologetic about the shit at all.
Yeah, she wasn't like a spoiled rich brat that she was kind of positioned to be.
I found that about her on Red Table Talk, too.
I know I did not see her as such.
Exactly.
I didn't think that as such. I think that when you grow up with, you know, a certain lifestyle, people will just always say that about you.
Right away,
that's low-hanging fruit, right? Yeah, like, that's a very easy thing. Mm-hmm. And yes, and guess what? That is, it's a function of parents constantly living vicariously through their children. Because even in this life that we know we have, we have money to burn. Like, I could set $100,000 in the fireplace and nobody's gonna miss a meal, right? That kind of bread. They still felt like college was a accomplishment. They still felt like the same way your parents that might've been laborers, or civil servants that didn't go to college felt like they wanted that next generation
to go
to college. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found very interesting, is that these were people of enormous wealth, enormous ability and access, and they still wanted that. A part of that is for them. A part of that is a badge of honor as a parent, right? Is being able to say my kid went to Harvard or my kid went to Cornell, and any of that, you know, all that shit is bullshit. You know what I'm saying? All that shit is cucumber food. Like, get the fuck out of here with that shit.
Nigga. In the wings, in the wings, and no liquor. You know what I'm saying?
If my mama is making 90s TV syndication money and my dad owns a piece of fucking Target, I'm not going to college, bro. It's just not happening.
Again, I'm not to belabor, but it was also interesting to show how Rick had the whole system. They showed how he was paying people, like how he was doing what he's doing. Like, it was crazy. He was a nut job, but he had the system, you know, he had a system that down to the science until somebody, you know, ended up, you know, ratting them out. But like, if we use that, it was rocking for like 25 years he was doing this shit.
Somebody, and for clarity, the person who ratted him out was caught on an SEC violation.
Had nothing to do with him.
Had nothing to do with this. This was purely about that dude who did something at his day job no business doing that led the feds to this entire operation. The feds were none the fucking wiser.
Nope. And then he was like, yo, If I tell you about this shit, can I get that reduced time? Literally that, you know what I'm saying? So yeah,
I really enjoyed the one black man in the film who was. But look at all these other people that got paid.
Yeah, I liked him. He was about his business. He said, "Hey, it is what it is, nigga." Well, two black men. There was the soccer coach, and then there was a guy, like an academic black guy, who was talking about the. Remember, he had the glasses. He was just kind of talking about.
He was a trainer. Like he was a college counselor.
Exactly. He was just kind of telling about how it works. So anyway, yeah. So I recommend that when you got some time, watch that. I'm gonna watch Crip Camp some point this week, and I think is it this week or next week? Ayanna Van Zant comes back on. Can't wait for that.
Let me shout out that.
Why are you laughing at me, Ayanna?
Seems to really be enjoying Cynthia and Aretha and Nat Geo's Genius Aretha, I haven't watched it yet.
I'm gonna watch that.
I'm gonna binge on that probably this weekend.
Okay.
I just want to give. I do have a shout out. I want to give a shout out, and y'all keep my man Gene in y'all prayers. My man Gene been putting in 14-hour days and still got to come home and cook, make some eggs
from scratch.
I pray for my man Gene, man. They're gonna run Big Gene into the ground, baby. They ain't gonna be satisfied till Gene is laid up, man.
Has Gene been in the golf cart? I just want to know.
I ain't seen them.
Does Gene get to ride in the golf
cart? I don't think so.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
While Toya playing tennis 2-3 hours a day, every day, and drinking wine, this nigga got to come home after fighting the COVID.
Meanwhile, the baby's iPad can't stay on for old school. You better stay home and let that cable man come and fix that internet, gal.
Oh, she like, nah, I got tennis from 2 to 4:30.
What's the time? Also, I was not laughing at Iyama. I was laughing because my ridiculous husband has taught my daughter how to say Lethal Weapon when she wants to watch something else on TV.
Oh.
And she's over here asking me for chicken and saying the word Lethal Weapon over and over again.
All right.
Give me to change the channel.
That's a crazy code word.
So peace to this man for being ridiculous.
Peace is crap. All right. So we're going to see y'all next week. Y'all stay safe out there.
Later.
Go get your vaccine.
Peace.
Get shot up.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.